The fluorescent lights of the open plan office didn't just illuminate the space, they seemed to strip the skin off my back, exposing every nerve ending to the hum of the HVAC system that sounded like a low-grade panic attack. I sat there watching her, Allison, across the divider as she adjusted her monitor. She was wearing the exact shade of muted terracotta linen I'd bought from a boutique in Chelsea 3 weeks ago. A piece I'd specifically mentioned was a find during a shared lunch that I now realized was a reconnaissance mission. It wasn't just the shirt. It was the way she tucked her hair behind her left ear when the senior VP walked by. A localized tic I'd developed in my 20s to hide a faint scar. A gesture she had no biological reason to possess. The architectural firm we worked for was a shark tank of blueprints and billable hours. But Allison wasn't swimming. She was drafting a blueprint of my soul and building a replica. The escalation had been surgical. It started with the inspiration folders. In our industry, your taste is your currency. A collection of textures, lighting schemes, and obscure brutalist references that define your signature. I'd left my workstation unlocked for 5 minutes to grab a double espresso. And when I returned, the cursor was hovering over my Project Obsidian mood board. She didn't jump. She didn't look guilty. She just looked up at me with those wide, vacuous eyes and asked where I'd sourced the reclaimed slate texture, her voice a perfect melodic echo of my own cadence. Within a week, the pitch she delivered for the hotel lobby redesign was a carbon copy of my conceptual framework, right down to the specific placement of the cantilevered glass. She didn't just steal the work, she stole the why behind it. Articulating my own philosophy back to the partners while I sat there, a ghost in my own seat, watching the credit dissolve into her outstretched palms. I tried to tell myself it was just the industry, a hyper-competitive vacuum where ideas are communal property. But then the intrusion moved past the drywall. I'd mention a specific yoga studio I frequented to decompress from the 60-hour weeks, and 2 days later she was in the mat space directly behind me, breathing in my rhythm, wearing the same high-compression leggings I'd favored for years. She started ordering the same salad, heavy on the arugula and light on the dressing, a meal I ate out of a specific dietary necessity she didn't share. It was a slow-motion identity theft that HR wouldn't touch, because there were no threats, only sincerest flattery that felt like a burial. My psychological state was a fraying rope, the strands snapping one by one as I realized my secret flaw, my desperate need to be seen as original, was the very thing providing her with a roadmap. I was so obsessed with being unique that I had handed her the keys to my entire persona, and she was driving it better than I was. The point of no return arrived wrapped in a silk cocktail dress at the firm's annual gala, an event held in a converted warehouse that smelled of expensive cologne and desperation. I'd spent 2 months planning my appearance, a calculated balance of professional power and personal elegance, because I knew Mark would be there. Mark, my partner of 6 years, the man who knew the sound of my real laugh, the one I didn't use for clients. I walked in, feeling the weight of the moment, only to see her standing near the bar. She wasn't just wearing a similar dress. She had found the exact vintage slip I'd hidden in the back of my closet, a piece I'd only described to her once in passing as my lucky garment. But the dress was the least of it. I watched from the shadows of a concrete pillar as she approached Mark. She didn't lead with a handshake. She led with a tilt of the head, a specific way of narrowing her eyes that Mark always said made him feel like the only person in the room. It was my look. It was my intimacy, weaponized and directed at the man I loved. She was laughing at something he said, a sharp staccato sound that mirrored my own genuine amusement. And as she reached out to brush a speck of lint off his lapel, her fingers lingered just a second too long on his chest. It wasn't a flirtation, it was a demonstration. She looked over his shoulder, her eyes locking onto mine across the crowded room, and she didn't look away. There was no shame, only a terrifying, vacant triumph. She wasn't trying to climb the corporate ladder anymore. She was trying to step into my skin and zip it up from the inside. The air in the warehouse turned into static. I could hear the bass of the music thumping in my molars, a rhythmic warning that I was being erased in real time. Mark looked confused, his eyes darting between this mirror image woman and the space where he knew I should be. But the genius of her mimicry was that she was providing him with a version of me that was stripped of my exhaustion and my cynicism. She was the best of compilation of my life, playing on a loop for his benefit. I realized then that if I didn't act, if I didn't break the cycle, there would be nothing left of me but a series of habits performed by a stranger. My job was gone. My style was a uniform. And now the person who anchored me to reality was being lured into a funhouse mirror. I moved toward them, my heels clicking against the polished concrete like a countdown. Every step felt like I was reclaiming a piece of territory. But the closer I got, the more I saw the minute details she'd mastered. The way she held her wine glass by the base, the specific vocabulary of liminal spaces and tactile voids she was using to engage Mark in a conversation about a house we'd dreamt of building together. She had harvested my dreams like a crop. When I finally stood beside them, the silence that fell wasn't awkward. It was heavy with the realization that one of us was an intruder, and for a terrifying moment, looking at the way Mark was looking at her, I wasn't sure which one of us it was. She smiled at me, a perfect practiced curve of the lips that I'd seen in my own bathroom mirror 1,000 times. She said my name, but it sounded like she was claiming ownership of it, turning it into a title she was ready to inherit. Mark reached for my hand, but his eyes stayed on her for a fraction of a heartbeat too long, a look of cognitive dissonance that told me the infection had already set in. He couldn't tell where I ended, and she began, because she had spent months dissolving the border. I stood there, the lucky dress, feeling like a shroud, realizing that this wasn't about a promotion or a project. It was a total annexation of a human life. I leaned in, my voice a low whisper that only she could hear over the roar of the party, a sound that was raw and stripped of the polished persona she'd worked so hard to steal. I told her that she could have the blueprints, the wardrobe and the salads, but she would never have the one thing that made the engine run, the specific, crushing weight of the trauma that built these defenses in the first place. For the first time, the mask flickered. The wide-eyed innocence dropped away to reveal something hollow and starving, a void that no amount of mimicry could ever fill. But as she turned back to Mark, her hand sliding down to grip his arm with a proprietary strength, I saw the truth. She didn't need to be me to destroy me. She just needed everyone else to believe she was. I walked out of the warehouse into the cold night air, the smell of rain on asphalt hitting me like a slap to the face. I didn't look back to see if Mark followed. I didn't need to. I knew that when I got home, my keys might not fit the lock, or perhaps they would, and I'd find her already there, sitting in my chair, drinking my tea, waiting to tell me about the day we both just had. The obsession wasn't a phase, it was a permanent relocation. As I stood on the curb, watching my own reflection in a darkened storefront window, I realized I couldn't even recognize my own silhouette anymore. She hadn't just copied my life, she had moved into it and changed the locks, leaving me shivering on the outside of my own existence. A ghost watching a stranger live out my happily ever after.